This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Toni Williams, and it is so wonderful to host Street Theory and Say Adams. But let me introduce you. We have Liza Quiñones, we have Victor Marca Quiñones, and we have Say Adams. Tell us, what is Street Theory? Liza, you or Marca, either one of you can just tell me more about what that is.
So Street Theory is a creative agency that focuses on art and design in the public realm, working with contemporary artists and street artists.
Okay, now there's some work that you all have been doing that I think is just so provocative. It is Murals for the Movement. Now, where did that idea come from?
Murals for the Movement is a project and campaign that we started in 2020. Mm-hmm. We were in the middle of the pandemic, and we had just come off of, we were in the middle of all of the uprisings that were happening through the Black Lives Matter movement and the unfortunate killing of George Floyd. And it was really a combination of those things happening that spawned the desire to get together, raise money, and create a platform for artists of color to create their art in large-scale ways.
Now, talk to me about the money piece. I believe you said this is crowdfunded, and what was that process like?
So initially, it was a crowdfunded campaign. And I started off with a GoFundMe, and that started to raise some traction. And then I moved it to a platform called Patronicity that focuses on crowdfunding specifically for public artworks. And really, that's what it was. It was a grassroots-led movement to really raise the money for artists to be able to paint.
Now, what did this mean for you, Say, this whole idea of the way that the money was raised and provide an opportunity for you?
Well, I didn't really think about it. The only thing that I really try to focus on is making sure that the work that I make reaches the audience that I want to communicate with. And for me, first and foremost, that's primarily young people. I want them to be able to see themselves in the work that I make.
That's interesting. Now, I want to talk about something that really compelled me that I saw on your website, because we are at a time now where I think so many people are just feeling just unmoored, uncentered. And in your work, no weapon formed against thee shall prosper. How does that inform the work that you're doing, Marca?
Well, I can't speak for Sophia Dawson. Mm-hmm. She's a good friend of ours and a collaborator on this recent project, and she was the inspiration behind that title. It's a title that she's used in past work, and because we were working so closely together, we wanted to add a more spiritual element to the project because it was something that we felt spoke to, you know, a younger audience and also an older audience. But most importantly, we wanted to give people hope and faith that we're going to be able to overcome, you know, these atrocities that are happening to our young men of color, and really just wanted to emphasize the work that Sophia had been doing previously as well, when she did a whole series about mothers who are losing their children to, you know, unfortunate, you know, police brutality and violence.
Now, you did the mural on 195 Gold Street. Mm-hmm. And first of all, since we are on radio, people, you know, let's describe that for us. Let our listeners know where they can see this work, and then talk about the process, if you could.
Of course. Well, mm-hmm. Earlier you had mentioned Street Theory, and just to be clear, besides being an agency, the name itself just means to control your own narrative. You know, we come from the streets. The work that we produce was originated in the streets through graffiti culture, even before street art was a term. And because this is the culture that we come from, especially Say Adams and other, you know, generations that were at the very beginning of the forefront of this movement, we wanted to make sure that us artists of color are controlling the narrative for the culture that we're a big part of, that is really in our DNA. So with that in mind, when creating the mural that is at 195 Gold Street, the community had to be reflected in that mural. It had to communicate with them directly. It had to give them something to look forward to every morning. To see themselves on a wall is so meaningful for us. And I'm not making this up. I've heard this in every major city I've ever painted a person of color. The saddest thing I ever hear is somebody walking by saying, oh, did they pass away? Oh, did they get killed? Oh, what bad thing happened? And it hurts my heart to hear that the only time we're worthy to be painted on a mural is when something terrible happened. So we're really trying to change that narrative and empower people and make them understand that we're all worthy and that representation is extremely important.
And being able, now when you talk about coming from the streets, what does that mean?
I mean, it means literally that, right? A lot of us, you know, grew up with challenging times. You know, I was born in Mexico. I came here with immigrant parents. My wife is in the Philippines. You know, a lot of us come from, I would say, economically challenged, you know, resources and environments. So to come from that culture, to make something from nothing, I mean, that's what hip hop culture originated from, right? You didn't have places where you could play music. You didn't have places where you could celebrate each other. So you had to make something from nothing. And I think that to see how far we've come along as a people, as a culture, it's only important to continue that progression.
And say, what about you?
Tony, can I just chime in just to add something to what Mark had just said? The other thing about people that come from the street is it doesn't mean that you cannot come from a two-parent household. Mm-hmm. But what it definitely means is that if you're any type of creative or performer, that adults aren't checking for you. You have to figure out how you're going to navigate growing up on your own when it comes to opportunity. We don't have those things, especially in the 70s and 80s when I came up. We had to create things out of whatever we could. And in most cases, we did not have much. It does not mean that there wasn't, you know, three meals, you know, on the table at home. But when it came to anything that happened after you stepped outside, you had to figure out a lot of that stuff on your own.
Mm-hmm. So how do you figure it out? How do you figure that out? Because that's a really good point.
Absolutely.
No mentorship, no nothing. Just figure it out. Right.
Yeah. You know, that's the beauty of it. Right. And you figure it out by really being a part of the community, connecting with the people that are around you. Because anybody that I know that came from graffiti, they learn from another graffiti writer. They learn by making mistakes. They learn by practicing on the streets because there was no resources. There was no places where you could go and do these things. And most people never had access to galleries or museums, and schools weren't teaching art. So you learned what you learned from just seeing it on the streets and, you know, learning by mistakes, or hopefully meeting, you know, an older artist or graffiti artist that was willing to show you some of the ropes. You know, same thing with DJing. It's like something that you had to learn from somebody that actually learned from their mistakes, because there was never, you know, a school for DJing when we were growing up, and there was no internet, and there was no way to just YouTube it. So it's interesting when you see a new genre, a new culture where, you know, there's a movement of people appropriating the culture, but not really understanding the origins of it, or even, you know, the people that have authentically innovated it, you know, when there was nothing, you know. So we're very close to artists that push that movement, and we're like thankful to have a platform to continue doing it.
But hard to make a livelihood with it, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It's really passion driven from what I'm hearing. Right?
Certainly without a blueprint, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And elaborate on the blueprint.
Well, for example, I came up in the 70s and I was very young. And especially by traditional art standards, that doesn't mean, okay, I had the opportunity to go to an Ivy League school. I'm, you know, self-taught. So everything that I learned, I had to figure out on my own, just like Marcus said. But the other side of that is you don't have a mentor. You don't have anybody to show you the way. The only thing you really do have on your side is talent and youth. And youth is gigantic because you have time to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You have time to learn. You have time to grow. But having resources is gigantic. And for myself and a lot of my peers, we had to figure those things out on our own. And the only thing, like I said, that we really had as an advantage is that we ultimately really had nothing to lose.
Interesting. Interesting. Now let's talk about your work, say. Let's talk about the work that you have on Prospect at Adams Street.
Well, the love mural that I painted at that location was really about celebrating the community. I'm a Brooklyn artist. My studio is a couple of blocks away. And I really just wanted some representation so when I'm walking around the neighborhood, I can see imagery that reminds me of who I am and where I come from. And the thing that gave me so much joy was, even though it's on a semi-highway coming off the Brooklyn and the Manhattan Bridge, you get soccer moms walking through there, a lot of traffic coming off the Brooklyn Bridge, foot traffic. And everybody was so excited to see a positive message. And again, we're talking about, you know, right at the heels of COVID. And everybody needed that little burst of joy. And so for me, when I paint the word love, the whole goal is to really just to remind people that they are cared about, because something as simple as that can go right over people's heads. And when people were at the light, they would honk. People would stop. They'd bring me water. They'd talk to me.
I have a picture in front of it.
Nice. Yes. So many people do.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what it's for. And it's also an opportunity for other people to share. So if you want to take a selfie, knock yourself out. You don't have to tag me. It's not for me. It's for the community.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to Say Adams, Victor Marca Quinones, and Liza Quinones about street theory and murals for the movement. So let's continue. This project, Murals for the Movement, had some aims. And one of them was how do we redistribute wealth? Which I found that quite an aim for a mural project. Liza, can you speak to that?
I can. Again, mm-hmm. Really, it's just to access the wealth of resources that are in our society and redistributing it to where we are giving other artists of color the opportunities to access those resources for their projects.
We talked earlier about some issues that you had in terms of getting, I guess, brands to really look at paying artists. I think you talked about some. Speak to us about that. I don't want to tell the story. If you could just tell that story about how people want artists to work for free.
People want artists to work for free. And really, that's just what it is. You know, I think that certain brands believe that they're doing artists a favor by just giving them something to paint on, right? And, you know, a lot of Murals for the Movement came out of a situation where there was a brand that wanted our artists to paint on the plywood that was posted up on their windows during the pandemic. And, you know, they wanted an opportunity for us to be able to paint it so that their storefronts wouldn't be defaced, but didn't want to put together the resources to make sure that our artists were paid.
That's kind of disgusting to me. Say, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's not new. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can remember situations like that in the 70s, in the 80s when I came up. But I will say this. To me, it's really important to let young artists know that they have value, even if they've never gotten a commission, even if they've never sold a piece of work. You have to understand that in some cases, it's better to just say, you know what, no thank you. Because this idea that we are going to have exposure, something good is going to come down the road, we are down the road right now. Mm-hmm. There is no tomorrow. And artists need to understand the value of their work. Sometimes it's okay to say no. I need to be paid. It doesn't have to always be a lot, just something so you understand the value of your work. We put time and energy and resources into everything we do. And most of the time, you know, the stuff that you see is the second or third variation. So there might be multiple sketches before you get to a final. And then you go out and you paint something on a wall, or you paint a canvas or a panel or what have you. And somebody thinks that just because they're interested in your work, you should turn it over to them for free. No, we're not doing that anymore.
So how do we get society to make that shift, Victor, from being able to see that people need to be paid a livelihood for their talent and the resources that they bring to it? Where's the education? Where does the shift, where does the investment that we're looking for come from? How do we start that dialogue?
I think it's twofold. I think artists and brands both need to be held accountable. And I say that because as an artist, I've been in a situation where I had a location scout connect with me and tell me that they were filming this TV show that was for a big network and that they needed a sign off so they could get permission to film in front of my mural. So, of course, naturally, I say, OK, what's the compensation? Oh, there's no compensation. Mm. And, you know, it was in an area where it was saturated with murals. And the talent scout or the location scout said to me, well, you're the only artist who hasn't signed. So if you don't sign, we're going to have to, you know, build scaffolding in front of your mural and put nets in front of the scaffolding so it won't be in the way of the shot. And I said to him, well, let me get this straight. You don't want to pay any of the artists because you said there's no payment. But all the other artists were well aware of this and still signed off. And I'm the only artist who hasn't signed off. And they said, correct. He said, we have millions of viewers. I said, I understand that. So, but you're putting a message saying that I'd rather pay money to rent scaffolding, to get a crew of people to build this thing and block your mural instead of pay you anything. And I said, have fun building your scaffolding. And that's exactly what they did. But the message was, if we pay one artist, then we have to pay all of them. So they would rather not pay you. So it goes back to the artists. If 3, 4, 5 of us are saying, yeah, take my work for free, it makes it harder for the other artists to get paid because you're giving it away so often, you know. And as for brands, the challenge would be if you really don't have the resources, then in what other ways can you pay? Is there a product that you can do? Is there a space that you can give an artist? Is there sponsorship that you can do? You know, all these things can be figured out, but this give it to me for nothing, that's an exposure.
That's oppressive. That's just downright oppressive, right? Right, you know. But it sounds like you need coalition building, say. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you have to go one door at a time. And mm-hmm. whenever I speak to young people, I just try to encourage them to understand that they have value. It doesn't mean you have to get, you know, large sums of money, but you do have to understand that your work has value. And I think that's the most important thing, just instilling that inside them. So they, when they do say no, they don't feel like they've missed out on an opportunity of a lifetime.
Hmm. That's true, because that's what drives a lot of artists, the idea that maybe this exposure, no matter what kind of art you're into, could lead to something a lot bigger. Let's talk a little bit about technique, how you put these projects together. How do you do the work? What's the process of actually getting this work done, Victor?
The producing the work mm-hmm. or getting the projects?
Well, producing the work.
So producing mm-hmm. the work, I mean, for me, I've been spray painting over 20 years.
So spray painting. Yeah. I don't know why I thought it was brush strokes.
So for, I mean, studio work, yeah. I use brushes for studio work, a smaller canvas, so you have to, you know, use something that's more easier to control in a small setting. But for these, you know, huge 85-foot murals, It's a combination of using like a sprayer, using heavy machinery like an articulated boom lift or a scissor lift to get up, you know, a couple of stories, and also spray paint. It's just something that for me, it's always been a tool that meant something to me. When I think about spray painting, I think about, you know, Black and Puerto Rican. I think Latino and Black, because when I was growing up as a kid, I would look at, you know, the master Renaissance painters, and they were all old white guys. Mm-hmm. And I never really felt a connection to that medium because of that, until I realized later on that, you know, there was artists like Lee Quiñones, Say Adams, all these amazing people that reflected who I am and where I come from. And it made me want to learn how to spray paint and use that tool. It, you know, all these things that, again, connect to your culture, your DNA, your authenticity. You feel like, you know, you were carrying a torch when you're using that kind of medium and creating beautiful work out of it, because people assume it's just brushes.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to Say Adams, Victor Marca Quiñones, and Liza Quiñones. Now, Victor, I just wanted to ask you one other question. Is there some STEM involved in here? Because it looks like there's some math that goes into creating these projects.
Yeah, you know, there definitely is. You know, studying Mexican muralists as well, like there's always geometry involved. There's looking at architecture. There's mocking up your sketch on the actual building. I mean, everything always starts with a drawing and a sketch. And from that, you know, you do have to have a couple of techniques that I'm not willing to give away over the radio.
Okay.
You know, people got to earn that. Okay. They got to earn that.
Wonderful. Now, some other work that you've done is the Underground Mural Project. Would you like to speak about that?
Sure. The Underground Mural Project is a project that's based out of Boston. Mm-hmm. It's underneath, it's a overpass park, rather, in between the South End and South Boston neighborhoods. And it was literally a dump. Mm-hmm. Before it was redeveloped. And I mean, they were digging dead bodies out of this place, I think, when they were when they were constructing it for this park. And so it's a park that sits underneath the overpass, and it's filled with columns and things like that. And so in 2017, we were hired to come in and bring some artists to paint some of the spaces underneath, and it really transformed the area.
And have these works created community dialogue?
Absolutely. You know, the park itself, it's 8 acres of concrete and cement. And, you know, if you're familiar with the area, there's so many places you can go to. Why would you go to this park? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until all the murals and all the art installations happened that people started to come to this park, started to network with each other. I think what's most important is we had some very talented artists from the area, local artists that are diverse in terms of gender and ethnicity, create artwork that was meaningful to them as well as their community, that really made everybody feel more welcome to that particular space. Now when you go to that park, there's festivals there, there's activations there, you know, there's a dog park there. It feels a lot safer. More people have respect for the artwork there. So it's definitely something that has become a bit of a national attraction.
Now, how do you pay it forward when it comes to, you know, mentoring artists? Because that sounds like something that both of you have said did not happen. So what mm-hmm. is it that you're, I see that you're doing that with your son, Say. How are you doing that, Victor? How does that show up?
So with Street Theory, it's not just me. It's also Street Theory as an organization. And also, we really believe in each one teach one. We come from a generation where we saw how much it hurt to not have somebody that you could look up to, not be able to have a mentor or even learn from somebody. And, you know, some of us have siblings, some of us have close friends that have kids, and it's just natural and organic to want to teach your community and people within your community that are genuinely interested how they could carry the torch. Because we're not going to do this forever. And as you get older, you want to be able to pass down, you know, your capabilities to a younger generation. And we've been able to do that for the past few decades. You know, we've been able to work with artists that we see, you know, starting to flourish and really starting to grow and develop their own style, their own technique. And I love seeing them, you know, kind of take it to the next level, especially when they're able to reconnect and collaborate with us as young men, you mm-hmm. know, actually seeking their own goals as well.
And say, what about you?
Well, one of the things that I make sure that I do whenever I'm, you know, making work is I'm always trying to connect with young people. I travel around the country and I lecture and I mentor. And even when I'm doing a commercial project and I go into a marketplace, I make sure that I have time carved out to go to a local grade school, middle school, or high school to talk to students, because I think that it's a part of the responsibility to be an artist is to give back in the moment. You don't have to wait. And now that we have the aid of social media, it makes it that much easier for them to follow what you're doing. So when I'm traveling, I always want to connect with young people because, you know, right here in the community that we're in Fort Greene, I spent 10 years teaching at BAM across the street, Brooklyn Academy of Music. And those young people now are, you know, college age. And they've gone on to do great things. And through social media, they're able to let me know not only that they're okay, but they're thriving. And every once in a while, I will run into one of these young people at an art fair or some community activation, and they cannot wait to tell me how much they learned from that experience. So for me, that's its own reward. And that's why I do the work that I do, because I know that it's needed. I know that we need more mentors. We need more people to nurture young talent, especially when young people do not know their value. I'm not going to say that they don't all know their value, but certainly they need to hear it over and over and over again. And it needs to be reinforced. So when they go out into the marketplace, they can ask for something and feel like they deserve it.
They earned it. Yeah, they're worthy, right? Yeah. Right?
And,
they're worthy.
And when they get it, they know now it's your responsibility to pass that on to the next generation.
Well, that was a jewel. And I must say, this was a very rich conversation. Mm-hmm. You all are brilliant. That's what I say. You're brilliant.
There's one more thing I want to touch on really
Certainly.
Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Say and myself and, you know, most artists of color, we don't give ourselves enough credit for this. But in the art world in general, you can look at all the studies that are out there. 75% of the art world is controlled by white males mm-hmm. and represented by white men. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about mentoring. It's also about doing the work and passing that torch to other people that reflect your community. And representation is extremely important when it comes to the work that we do, and that they see people that look like their parents, their uncles, their brothers, doing the work and being at the forefront of these movements. Because what we don't want is to see people that don't reflect our community painting our community,
right?
Painting what matters to us and putting that message out there when, you know, we're the ones that should be doing it, because it's our community, it's our culture, and it's something that we're passionate about, and people need to see us doing it a lot more.
Right. Well, this has just been a robust, brilliant, and very comfortable conversation. Tell us how we can help. That's how I'll end that. So thank you so much.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.